Hey, Prime members, you can listen to The Vanished ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
Good afternoon. My name is John McCarthy, State's Attorney for Montgomery County, Maryland. On March the 25th, 1975, Catherine Lyon, age 10, and Sheila Lyon, age 12, walked from their home only a few blocks away from where we now stand. At the time, there was a strip shopping center that existed at that location, and the two girls went to the mall to see Easter decorations and to eat lunch. The girls were both seen by multiple people while at the shopping center, including one of their brothers. Neither Catherine nor Sheila ever returned home. Catherine and Sheila were reported missing to the Montgomery County Police Department that evening by their parents. The investigation into their disappearance is currently into its 41st year. This case has never left the collective consciousness of this police department nor our community. We owe a special debt of gratitude to the Chief of Police, Tom Manger, and the men and women of Montgomery County Police Force for their leadership. This investigation continues today, and it will go beyond the events that we are about to outline. This investigation has gone beyond the boundaries of Montgomery County, and it possesses the challenges of a 40-year-old case. I wish to acknowledge John and Mary Lyon, who join us here today, along with three generations of the Lyon family.
Hello, and welcome to episode 28 of The Vanished. Tonight, I will be covering the disappearance of Catherine and Sheila Lyon. Before we get started, I wanted to thank everyone for their continued support of the show. This past weekend, I was shocked to see that the show made it to number 10 on the iTunes history chart. I made a map to go with this episode, so if you would like to check it out to follow along, it is on thevanishedpodcast.com. The disappearance of the Lyon sisters was a case that rocked a region of this country in the 1970s. The case received a lot of news coverage at the time because it was unbelievable that these two beautiful sisters could go missing, and also their father was a famous radio personality. On March 25, 1975, 10-year-old Catherine and 12-year-old Sheila left their home in Kensington, Maryland between 11 a.m. and noon, to walk about a half mile to Wheaton Plaza to see Easter exhibits. Wheaton Plaza was a shopping mall that today is called Westfield Wheaton. Before they left, their mother told them to be home by 4 p.m. that day. Around 1 p.m., a boy from the neighborhood saw them talking to a man outside of a pizza shop called the Orange Bowl. He described the man as being between 50 and 60 years old, about 6 feet tall, and he was wearing a brown suit. He was carrying a briefcase with a tape recorder inside. There were other children with them as well, and they were talking into the microphone. Around 2 p.m., their older brother, Jay, saw them eating pizza at the Orange Bowl. Between 2:30 and 3 p.m., a friend of theirs saw them walking down a street near the mall. The street that they were on would have been a direct route to their home. This is the last confirmed sighting of Catherine and Sheila. Their mother became concerned when they did not come home at 4 p.m. and called police at 7 p.m. that night. A massive search ensued. Volunteer groups helped search for the girls, and the National Guard was called in. The man with the tape recorder initially became the prime suspect in the case. Police released two composite sketches of the man. Several people came forward and said that a man matching that description had been seen a few weeks before the sisters went missing at the Marlow Heights Shopping Center and the Iverson Mall. These malls were both about 35 to 40 minutes away from Wheaton Plaza. The man had approached young girls and asked them to record an answering machine message that was typed on an index card. The family received several phone calls from people claiming to have the girls. These people were trying to collect ransom money. On April 4, 1975, a man called and demanded that Sheila and Catherine's father leave a briefcase with $10,000 inside a bathroom in a courthouse in Annapolis, Maryland. The money was left, but no one ever came for it. The man called John Lyon back and said he did not pick it up because police were at the courthouse watching. They told the man that he would have to show them some proof that he had the sisters in order to get the ransom money. The man said that he would call back, but he never did. About 2 weeks after Sheila and Catherine disappeared, a witness came forward and reported seeing two girls who looked just like the sisters in Manassas, Virginia. The witness said that he saw them bound and gagged in the back of a beige 1968 Ford station wagon, and the driver looked like the man in the sketch that had been released. The driver noticed the witness was following him and proceeded to run a red light and speed off on Route 234 towards Interstate 66. The vehicle had a Maryland license plate which read DMT6, but the witness could not see the last two numbers because the license plate was bent. That combination had been issued in Cumberland, Hagerstown, and Baltimore, Maryland around that time. That night, people in the area who had CB radios scoured the area looking for the station wagon, but found nothing. Police tried to find a vehicle that matched the description with that license plate number, but that led nowhere. The lead was thought to be credible at the time, but the police eventually considered it to be questionable. Several suspects were looked at over the years. The first suspect is Fred Howard Coffey. He is currently serving a life sentence for the 1979 murder of 10-year-old Amanda Marie Ray. He invited her to go fishing with him, and several of her friends saw her with him that day. She had even called her mother and told her that she was going fishing with a nice, gray-haired man, and her mother told her not to go. He did not go on trial until 1986. He was convicted and sentenced to death. His death sentence was overturned by the North Carolina Supreme Court in 1991. He was resentenced to death for a second time, but in 1995, due to a technicality, he was resentenced to life in prison. The state of North Carolina did not have life without parole at the time, so he came up for parole in 2012 and 2015. It was denied both times. Amanda's mother has a website about this, and she asks that people write letters to the parole board. They have to read every single letter they receive. If you would like to help her with this in the future, please go to justiceforamanda.tripod.com for more information. Coffey has admitted to molesting 100 children all over the East Coast. In 1987, the police began to investigate his possible connection to the Lyon sisters. Authorities said that he was in the area of Wheaton Plaza when they vanished. They found out that he had a job interview in Silver Spring, Maryland, 6 days after they disappeared, and they think that he was in the area looking for jobs at the time. They were never able to link him to the Lyon sisters, but he is suspected in many other cases from around that time. He was known to lure children with fishing poles or metal detectors. Police found that to be interesting and wondered if maybe he could have been the man with the tape recorder and was using that to lure Sheila and Catherine. The next suspect is Raymond Rudolph Molesky Sr. In 1975, he lived in Suitland, Maryland, which is not far from the malls where the man with the recorder was seen. In 1977, he got into an argument with his wife and murdered her, their son, and injured their other son. Authorities searched his former home in 1982 because prison informants had come forward with information, and also Molesky himself said that he knew something about the Lyon sisters and wanted to exchange the information for better prison conditions. During the search, they dug about a dozen test holes in the yard, but they did not find anything. Molesky died while in prison in 2004. Another suspect is John Crutchley, also known as the vampire rapist. He was a convicted rapist, but it is believed that he may have been a serial killer as well, and is a suspect in about 30 cases. He got the vampire rapist nickname after a brutal rape in 1985. It was Thanksgiving, and his wife was away visiting family for the holiday. Crutchley picked up a hitchhiker and told her that he would take her where she needed to go, but that he had to stop at his house first. When they got to his house, he invited her in, but she declined the invitation. He then proceeded to get into the back of the vehicle and choke her unconscious. Now the story goes from bad to worse here. She woke up tied to a kitchen countertop, and he had set up lights and a camera. He raped her, and then he put a needle in her arm to extract blood, and then he drank it. Crutchley handcuffed her to a bathtub, only to return multiple times for more rounds of sexual assault and blood extraction. At one point, he left and she was able to kick out a bathroom window and escape. She was found crawling down the street, both her hands and ankles were handcuffed. A passerby stopped and she asked the man not to take her back to that house and pointed it out to him. She was taken to a hospital and they were able to determine that she was missing 40 to 45% of her blood. Had she not escaped when she did, she may not have survived another round of him extracting more blood. When they searched his home, investigators took pictures of a stack of credit cards that was several inches thick and also a collection of women's necklaces that was hidden in a closet. For some unknown reason, they did not collect this evidence, and when they went back a second time, it was all gone. It is thought that those items may have linked him to other missing and murdered women. I found a quote in my research that really bothered me. Crutchley's wife commented on the rape that he was convicted of and said that it was a gentle rape devoid of overt brutality. Who says something like that? He has been suspected in the Lyon case, but all I could find to link him to the area was that his wife's family lived nearby. Crutchley died in prison in 2002. He was found with a plastic bag over his head, and it was determined that he had died of autoerotic asphyxiation. Good riddance.
We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but when it comes to your health, there's no compromise. So don't settle for that one doctor that isn't really addressing your needs. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable. And you can even search by location, availability, and insurance. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doc you want, you can book them immediately. You can filter specifically for ones who take your insurance, are located near you, and treat basically any condition you're searching for. The typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between just 24 and 72 hours. That's it. I use this and you should too. Go to ZocDoc.com/vanished and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/vanished. ZocDoc.com/vanished. This message is sponsored by Greenlight. When you're a parent, you'll have your fair share of big talks with your kids. One of those big talks should involve money, and Greenlight can help with that. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families. You can send your kids instant money transfers, get real-time notifications of spending, manage chores, and automate allowance. I've been using Greenlight with my older two kids for years. One thing that I love about it is that I can set up recurring or one-time chores, customized to my family's needs, and then my kids earn an allowance to reward them for a job well done. Not only does it motivate them to actually get the chores done, but it also teaches them a bit about financial literacy and independence. They're learning to earn, save, and spend wisely. So stop putting off the money talk and start putting your kids on the right path. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/vanished. That's greenlight.com/vanished to try Greenlight for free. One more time, that's greenlight.com/vanished.
In 2014, authorities announced a break in the case and a new person of interest.
This case shocked our community in 1975 and has never been forgotten by the police department or anyone who followed the case 39 years ago. Our cold case squad has been able to identify a man who is currently incarcerated as a convicted child sex offender, and we have established that this man was at Wheaton Plaza on that day and may have had contact with the Lyon girls. The person of interest is Lloyd Lee Welch, also known as Michael or Michael Welch. I want to tell you what we know, and after I finish filling you in on details we've been able to establish, I'm then going to ask for the public's help, anyone's help who may be able to fill in some of the blanks that we're dealing with. Investigators have established the fact that Welch was at Wheaton Plaza on March 25th, 1975. We've also established that Welch was observed paying attention to the Lyon sisters while at Wheaton Plaza. Welch now has multiple convictions for sexual offenses against young girls and has been incarcerated since 1997 in the state of Delaware for one of these offenses. Welch has criminal convictions involving young female victims in the states of Virginia, Delaware, and South Carolina. Although he is originally from the Washington, D.C. area, Welch has traveled extensively throughout the United States during the 1970s, 80s, and early 90s. He was employed by a carnival company which traveled to various locations throughout the United States, often setting up at shopping malls. Welch was a ride operator for the carnival. He also was accompanied in his travels, by his girlfriend, Helen Craver, who was also employed by the carnival company.
When cold case detectives decided to take a fresh look at the case in 2013, they found a statement made by Lloyd Lee Welch back in 1975. He had inserted himself into the investigation by going to Wheaton Plaza about a week after the sisters disappeared. He found a security guard and asked about the girls. The security guard was suspicious enough to contact the police. Welch told the police that he was at Wheaton Plaza the day they vanished and saw them get into a vehicle with a man. They gave him a polygraph test and determined that he was being untruthful, but did not recognize his importance to the case at the time. During the 2013 investigation, police found a statement from a friend of the sisters saying that a man had been staring at Sheila and Catherine that day. She found the behavior to be so odd that she even confronted the man about it. A composite sketch was made of this man, but it was not widely distributed. Detectives found a mugshot of Welch from an arrest for a burglary in the mid-1970s that very closely matched the sketch of the man who kept staring at the girls. The burglary had taken place just blocks from Wheaton Plaza. They looked into his background and found that he had been incarcerated in Delaware since 1997 for sexually abusing a 10-year-old girl. Welch pleaded guilty to first-degree unlawful sexual intercourse and unlawful sexual penetration in that case. They also found that he had convictions for sexually assaulting young girls in South Carolina and Virginia. Detectives went to Delaware to question Welch. They interviewed him several times, and these interviews led to several searches of properties that were owned by Welch family members. I had Brooke from Actual Innocence read one of the search warrants for me. It includes a lot of important facts about the case.
On October 16, 2013, Montgomery County Police detectives interviewed Welch in a Delaware police facility. Welch immediately acknowledged that he knew the detectives from Montgomery County were there to discuss the disappearance of two young girls. Welch further explained that he had corresponded with his sister and he knew why detectives wanted to speak with him. During the 8-hour interview, it became apparent to detectives that Welch was being deceptive. Welch did acknowledge that he was in Wheaton Plaza on the day the Lyon sisters were reported missing. When detectives asked Welch what happened to the Lyon sisters, he stated that he believed they were abducted, raped, and burned up. Welch eventually told the detectives that he no longer wanted to cooperate by answering questions, and that detectives should charge him with murder and take him back to prison. Since the initial interview, detectives have spoken to Welch on several different occasions, to include an interview after a media release identifying Lloyd Welch as a person of interest in this case. After speaking with Welch, he informed the writer that he had lied about most of the information he had provided in the past interviews and wanted to start over. Welch acknowledged that he was in the mall that day. He followed the Lyon sisters around the mall. He recalled seeing them in the food court prior to them leaving and was able to accurately describe the flowered shirt worn by one of the Lyon girls. Welch also stated that he was behind the Lyon sisters as they exited the store. He further explained he witnessed his cousin, Thomas Teddy Welch, and an unknown male with their arms around the Lyon sisters. According to Welch, he then got on a bus and lost sight of Thomas Welch and the Lyon sisters. On July 14, 2014, detectives with the Montgomery County Police interviewed Lloyd Welch again about the abduction and disappearance of the Lyon sisters. Lloyd Welch provided detectives with the details about his involvement, as well as his cousin Thomas Welch and his uncle Richard Welch. Lloyd stated that he and Thomas were in the mall that day. At some point, Thomas met him with the Lyon sisters. He informed the writer all left the mall together and got into Richard Welch's Ford station wagon and returned to Richard Welch's residence in Hyattsville, Maryland. The next day, Lloyd went back to the residence and witnessed Richard Welch engaging in sexual activity with one of the Lyon sisters in a room in the basement. He further explained the room in the basement was kept secure with a lock and could only be accessed by Dick Welch. Detectives have located several parcels of land on Taylor Mountain in Thaxton, Bedford County, Virginia, that are either currently or previously owned by members of the Welch family. One of these properties is currently owned by Richard Welch. Adjacent to the property owned by Richard Welch is a parcel of land that was previously owned by Elizabeth and Alan Parker. Elizabeth Parker, now deceased, was the sister of Richard Welch and the aunt of Lloyd Welch and Thomas Welch Jr. On September 18, 2014, Connie Akers, the daughter of Elizabeth Parker, was interviewed by investigators. Akers lived on the family property on Taylor Mountain in 1975. Akers reported that in or about the spring of 1975, Lloyd Welch and a female companion arrived at her family's residence unexpectedly. Akers stated that Lloyd Welch had a duffel bag containing bloody clothing. Lloyd Welch asked Akers to wash the clothes for him, but she refused. Lloyd Welch told Akers that he had been carrying ground beef in the duffel bag, which had gone bad and caused his clothing to become bloody. This investigation has revealed that in March 1975, when the Lyon sisters went missing, Lloyd Welch was dating Helen Craver and that Craver was pregnant. In an interview with police, Henry Parker corroborates the statements of his sister Connie Akers, specifically that Lloyd Welch showed up on the property on Taylor Mountain Road in 1975 with two green army-style duffel bags that weighed between 60 and 70 pounds. He further described the duffel bags as having reddish-brown stains and the odor of decomposition. Parker stated that he had heard through family conversations that Lloyd Welch was running from law enforcement in the Maryland area and was supposed to have two girls with him whose parents were searching for them in Maryland. Parker stated that he assisted his cousin Lloyd Welch in throwing the aforementioned duffel bags into a fire on the Taylor Mountain Road property, where they were burned over a several-day period. Henry Parker's statements are similar to that of other witnesses who lived in the area during the same time frame, who remembered a fire which lasted several days on the Parker property in 1975 and had the odor of a cremation. When asked if she had spoken to anyone about the case, Connie Akers stated that she has contacted family members in the Virginia and Maryland area. Other witnesses have stated that Connie Akers has been communicating frequently with other family members and persons of interest in the case. Deborah Amos Hunter stated that Connie Akers corresponded with the lead suspect, Lloyd Welch, who was and is incarcerated in a Delaware prison. The status of Lloyd Welch was confirmed by Maryland investigators due to the threats Lloyd Welch received while incarcerated, due to the press release naming him as a person of interest in the disappearance of the Lyon sisters. Based on her own admissions, Connie Akers was a witness to the arrival of Lloyd Welch with a duffel bag that she described as containing bloody content and having a foul smell. A search of her residence is requested to locate photographs of the Taylor Mountain property in 1975. Correspondence with other family members and associates which relates details of the investigation and any and all correspondence between Connie Akers and Lloyd Welch.
First of all, has anyone ever carried ground beef in a duffel bag before? That is probably the most ridiculous excuse that I've ever heard. Also, now it appears to be a family affair with multiple family members possibly being involved in the abduction, murder, and disposal of Sheila and Catherine. I would like to point out here that Lloyd Lee Welch was only 18 when the sisters disappeared. It seems like a brazen first-time crime for him to commit alone. It is interesting that in future known crimes that he committed, he de-escalated and did not murder the girls that he assaulted. Could he be responsible for other murders? Sure. We just don't know. There were many other family members mentioned in that warrant, but the most important players to remember are Lloyd, his uncle Richard, also mentioned as Dick in that document, Henry Parker, who is Lloyd's cousin, he is the one that helped dispose of the duffel bags, and Thomas Welch Jr., who was another cousin that Lloyd says was there the day the girls disappeared. Thomas has also stated that he saw two blonde girls at the home of Richard, the uncle, on Easter 1975, and he believes that they were the Lyon sisters. He also said that Lloyd and Lloyd's girlfriend, Helen Craver, were also at the residence at the time. A law enforcement official anonymously stated to the Washington Post in 2015 that a nephew of Richard Welch told authorities that Richard recently admitted to him that he and other family members had raped and killed the Lyon sisters and disposed of their bodies on Taylor's Mountain. I did a little more research on this and found that this nephew was Wes Justice. He claims that Richard told him that he and several other family members raped, murdered, chopped up, and burned Sheila and Catherine Lyon. The sexual assaults were said to have happened on a pool table in Richard Welch's home. More recently, Lloyd has stated that he saw his own father, who was also named Lloyd Lee Welch, and his uncle, Richard, kill one of the Lyon sisters. Lloyd's father is deceased. In January 2015, several jurisdictions worked together to complete searches of multiple properties owned by members of the Welch family.
The FBI's evidence response team, Virginia State Police, Montgomery County Police, Bedford County Sheriff's Office, who spent many painstaking hours in very rough terrain, in very heavy, heavy, cold, snowy weather up on the mountains looking for forensic evidence in this particular case. During these investigative efforts and searches, neither a whimper, whine, or woe is me was heard from any of the investigators. Their bulldog tenacity in achieving justice for the Lyons family and their profound loss never wavered, and it never will.
Authorities have released a list of items that were found on one of the properties. This list includes multiple possible bone fragments, fibers, burned wire, charcoal, melted metal, and a burned plastic bag. It is unknown at this point what relevant evidence they were able to recover at the site. During a search of Richard's home, knives and a hatchet were seized. Last summer, another family member's home was searched in Salem, Virginia. Connie Akers, who Brooke mentioned, was the cousin of Lloyd and niece of Richard. She is the one that was asked to wash the bloody clothes and refused. Her brother, Henry, is the one that helped Lloyd put the duffel bags in the fire. When they searched her home, police took letters, two cell phones, one laptop, one tablet, one CD case with 12 discs, and one notepad-style journal from her home. Another search warrant was served at the home of Amy Welch Johnson, who was the granddaughter of Richard. It is alleged that she was communicating via text message and Facebook with other family members regarding the case and immediately deleting the conversations. Her computer and phone were both seized. Authorities believe that there is an ongoing conspiracy to cover up what really happened to Sheila and Catherine.
You mentioned a conspiracy to conceal this crime. Can you elaborate on that at all or describe how many people were involved in covering this up?
Well, that remains part of the ongoing investigation that we believe that there are people that have information that knew about what was occurring and that was criminal behavior on their part, not coming forward and not assisting with this investigation. And so that's now continues to be a part of our investigation.
Several family members have been charged with perjury and other related offenses after testifying before a grand jury. They include Richard's wife, Patricia Welch, was charged with perjury in December of 2014. Leslie Engelking, who is Richard's brother-in-law, was also charged with perjury in 2015. Amy Welch Johnson, Richard's granddaughter, was charged with obstruction of justice last year, which is not as serious as perjury. Richard Welch's sister, Gladys Stange, was also charged in 2015 with obstruction of justice.
The two women, Gladys Stange and Amy Welch Johnson, are charged with obstruction of justice, but facing different sentences on what the Commonwealth attorney tells me are different levels of obstruction. Stange pled no contest and is sentenced to 30 days in jail, with all of that suspended if she cooperates with the Commonwealth moving forward. Welch Johnson entered an Alford plea and is sentenced to 12 months in jail, with all of that but 90 days in jail suspended if, like Stange, cooperates with the Commonwealth moving forward. The Commonwealth attorney said the judge didn't have to suspend any part of the sentences, but believes giving that incentive could help them with the investigation to finding out what happened to the Lyon sisters.
What's our goal in this entire case is to get to the truth. It's not about a misdemeanor conviction, but it's about getting to the truth and protecting the integrity of the grand jury system.
Leslie Engelking is charged with felony perjury. If convicted, he could face up to 10 years in prison. In court today, Engelking acknowledged there is probable cause to find him guilty or that he had committed the offense. He waived his right to a preliminary hearing today. His case will go before a regular grand jury in circuit court in December for indictment. Upon his indictment, a trial date will be set for his perjury charge.
I found the following quote in a court document. Investigators have also discovered that on the day of the press conference naming Lloyd Welch as a suspect in the Lyon sisters' investigation, Richard Welch and Thomas Welch Jr. had a lengthy telephone call with one another and also met in person for several hours. When interviewed by investigators regarding this activity, Richard Welch and Thomas Welch Jr. gave conflicting statements, as did Patricia Welch, who was also present for this meeting. Additionally, Richard Welch told investigators that it was unusual for Thomas Welch Jr. to call him or visit him at home, and this is supported by analysis of their phone records. Regarding the Taylor's Mountain property, several relatives of Richard Welch have told investigators that it was common for family members to visit and stay with the sister, Elizabeth Parker, in throughout the time she lived on this property, and that it was a location where family members would partake in excessive drug and alcohol use. Lloyd Lee Welch is set to stand trial in October of this year. Here is some more information on his charges.
In October 2014, Commonwealth Attorney Randy Kranz began presenting evidence relating to this case to a Bedford County multi-jurisdictional grand jury. The grand jury has remained in session continuously since it was impaneled and remains so today. As a result of the evidence presented before the grand jury, indictments were handed down in this case on Friday, July the 10th, 2015, in Bedford County, Virginia. The indictments were sealed at that time, but are now being unsealed today. I am honored to report that my Commonwealth attorney, Randy Kranz, obtained indictments charging Lloyd Lee Michael Welch Jr. with first-degree felony murder for his involvement in the deaths of Sheila and Catherine Lyon based upon the totality of the evidence revealed by the investigative effort of law enforcement and sworn witness testimony. As previously mentioned, the investigator remains very active, and investigative actions will continue, with gusto, I might add.
It is now my pleasure to introduce the Commonwealth Attorney for Bedford County, Virginia, Randy Kranz.
Ladies and gentlemen, it has been said sometimes at momentous occasions or at milestones that it's not the end of the process, it's not even the beginning of the end of the process, but it may be the end of the beginning. If we in Bedford County have obtained indictments as we have done, and we seem at this point to have a view in going forward in the trial of Lloyd Welch, if we see a little farther down the road at this precise moment, it is only because we stand on the shoulders of the giants in law enforcement and prosecution here in Montgomery County that got us to this point and continue to work with us. The indictments that were unsealed were two, charging Lloyd Welch Jr. with first-degree felony murder during an abduction with the intent to defile Sheila and Catherine Lyon. The next step in the process will be beginning the trial process, and it is our duty and it is our intent to exercise every process that is due to ensure that Mr. Welch receives a fair trial.
Murder charge in Virginia.
At night, we have to apply the charge that was in place in 1975. In 1975, first-degree felony murder carried the penalty of 20 years to life or death.
Could you tell if the abduction that you intend to file, is that a separate charge or is that under the murder charge?
It is under the murder charge. What first-degree felony murder is the allegation that during the commission of the abduction of Sheila and Catherine Lyon, with the intent to defile. Intent to defile means to sexually abuse, exploit, molest. During that abduction, and as a natural consequence of that abduction, Lloyd Welch also committed the first-degree murder of those girls. So the words and the allegation and the charge are that this was a murder during an abduction. Two counts, one for each victim.
Authorities believe that he may be involved in other unsolved crimes.
Do you think that Lloyd Welch would be involved in the disappearance of other children somewhere else in the country?
I'm not going to speculate that, other than the fact that we know that Mr. Welch is incarcerated on sexual offenses against children, where he's serving time now. So I'm not going to speculate that. I don't know that's fair to anybody, but we know what he's in jail for.
I mean, that's been part of our investigation all along, is to try and track his Welch's activities from the time that this abduction occurred through to when he was incarcerated. So yeah, we're our investigators. That's part of what they've been doing all over the country.
He had worked with a traveling carnival and has been all over the United States. They released a list of places that they know he visited. Some have exact dates and some do not. The map that I made for this episode has those dates and places marked in black. Just click on them for more information. The FBI is asking for anyone who knew Lloyd Lee Welch over the years to please call 1-800-CALL-FBI. Moving on to theories, authorities have stated that they believe the girls were murdered in Virginia sometime between March 25th and April 1st. I do believe that Lloyd Lee Welch is involved, and we will have to see what information comes out at trial. As far as the other family members go, I have a couple of theories. They could be completely uninvolved, and Lloyd is trying to throw some responsibility onto others. Maybe he has a grudge against certain family members. I have seen other family members call him the black sheep of the family. I think Lloyd acting alone in this crime is unlikely due to the amount of suspicious behavior that many family members have exhibited. Richard Welch is considered a person of interest, and I personally believe that he was most likely involved. I think that a lot of family members either knew what was going on during the time or found out after. I do not know why they kept this information for so long. I know that if I knew something about the abduction, rape, and murder of children, I would not be able to sleep at night. I think some family members may have had a larger role than they are admitting to, and are trying to appear as innocent witnesses. The one cousin, Michael, who said he saw the girls at Richard's house at Easter, was just a child at the time. He may have been too intimidated to say anything. One thing that I keep going back to in my mind is, whether this was done by one person or several, taking two girls like this seems like a brazen first crime. If Lloyd did this alone, was this his first time? We know that he molested other girls later, but did he kill any other victims? If this was done by several family members as a group, did they just come up with the idea one day and decide to go out and find some kids to rape and murder? Were they involved in other crimes before this? What about after? Was this kind of behavior normal for this family? Authorities seem to be pushing the family really hard to get them to talk, and that is why they have charged several with perjury and related charges. I think they must have a pretty good idea of what happened and need to get some of these people to say more. I hope that they are able to hold those involved accountable. This case has been really hard to cover because the details are so sick and disturbing. Imagining those beautiful little girls being held and assaulted by these sick people for days is really too much. If you have any information about the disappearance of Sheila and Catherine Lyon, or information regarding the Welch family, please call the Montgomery County Police Department at 240-773-5070. That brings us to the end of this episode. I would like to thank everyone for listening. I would also like to thank Brooke for helping me out. Her podcast is called Actual Innocence, and she shares the stories of those who have been wrongfully convicted and eventually exonerated. I highly recommend her show if you are interested in the justice system. I will be posting pictures related to the case on thevanishedpodcast.com and on Twitter at thevanishedpod. There is a closed discussion group on Facebook. Just ask to join and someone will approve you as soon as possible. I have a new place that I would like you to send topic suggestions. If you go to thevanishedpodcast.com, there is a new page called Topic Suggestions. Please submit your suggestions there because it automatically puts them in a spreadsheet for me, which is helping me keep them all organized. I have a call-in line and the number is 814-VANISH-9. If you would like to contribute to the show, you can do that on patreon.com/thevanished podcast. Your donations are greatly appreciated, since they help defray some of the production costs of the show. I also would like to thank everyone who has left me a kind review on iTunes that helps more people find the show and hear these stories. My goal is to hopefully someday reach someone who knows something about one of these cases. Tune in next week for a new episode of The Vanished.
Good afternoon. On behalf of the Lyon family, they wish to make this following statement. March 25th will mark 39 years since Kate and Sheila were taken from our family. Throughout these years, our hopes for a resolution of this mystery have been sustained by the support and efforts of countless members of law enforcement, the news media, and the community. The fact that so many people still care about this case means a great deal to us. We especially appreciate the tireless efforts of the Montgomery County Police Department, the FBI, and all agencies that have worked to solve this case. We are grateful for any information the public can provide to help bring this story to its conclusion, and ask that the family's privacy be respected during this time.
This episode is brought to you by the effortlessly scrumptious bite of Skinny Pop Popcorn. Imagine this: perfectly popped, endlessly delicious kernels, a symphony of just three simple ingredients: popcorn, sunflower oil, and a sprinkle of salt. No compromise, just pure snacking freedom. And hey, if you're up for a twist, dive into flavors like zesty white cheddar to sweet and salty kettle. Every bite's a delight, light and oh so tasty. Shop Skinny Pop now.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader, like that car riding your tail. Or if you're tailgating right now, all those cars doubling as kitchens and living rooms are on AutoTrader too. Are you working out and listening to this ad at the same time? Well, multitasking pro, cars like the ones in the gym parking lot are for sale on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.